Behind the Badge Illinois, giving you the inside scoop on public safety and those who protect and serve. Hear real stories directly from law enforcement experts and get a chance to ask questions about issues you've always wanted to know more about. You have the right to remain informed. This is Behind the Badge Illinois.
Welcome to this week's episode of Behind the Badge Illinois. I'm David Hochberg, your host. On today's show, we got expert panel Chief Johnson, Fairview Heights, Illinois, Chief Jogman, Lou Jogman, Steve Johnson out in Fairview Heights, Lou Jogman, Highland Park, Eric Echeverria in Peoria, Chief of Peoria. How they do, Chief? They do all right?
That's good. We'll give you some more practice. We got some time to practice.
We'll get it right at some point.
And Chief David Byrd out in DeKalb, my alma mater over there by NIU. We're recording this the day after the shooting at the Kansas City Chief Celebration Victory Parade. There were over 800 law enforcement officers, according to the news reports there. And again, everything is still developing. As you guys know, it's a fluid situation. According to newscasts, there were three individuals detained. There was one fatality, a 40-year-old radio personality I learned this morning in Kansas City who had a family. So she passed away yesterday, and over 20 others shot, including, I believe the number was 11 children were taken to a children's hospital to be Mercy Hospital in Kansas City to be taken care of. So we ended last week's show on being aware when you go out. And unfortunately, yesterday's events kind of tee this up even more importantly as to what the public has to do to be safe. And as I was driving in, I was listening to different radio stations and different coverages. And there was an interview of a mother, a mom who brought her kids down, who said, "I'm afraid to bring my kids out to large events," which is not the direction we want to go as a society. I'll just make that general. We don't want everybody to be bunkered down in our houses and be afraid to leave the safety of our house. So I'll throw this out there to you boys about public safety and what the public should do. And since you had a similar event, unfortunately, Chief Jogman, up in Highland Park a couple of years ago on the 4th of July, this hits really close to home. And why don't you lead it off and then we'll just go around the horn.
All right. Yeah, no question. It's a concerning time. You know, the understandably people are nervous. I can tell you firsthand the impact it has on the community. You know, we still have people who are extremely uncomfortable with being in public and public spaces. And to your point, David, that is not what we want. And that the job we do is to ensure that people can move about safely, you know, in the community and go about their lives and enjoy things. But that said, where we are and people have individual liberties and have can make decisions. And unfortunately, some people make bad decisions and it impacts other people. We have to really take a look at how we are out in the public space. You know, you can definitely be home and know that you can feel safe there. But, you know, when I talk about, and I talk about with my family and I talk about with my kids and the advice I give as a law enforcement officer, but as a father, I think it's important to just put it in context and put it in perspective. You want to be certainly, you don't want to bunker down, but you want to be careful. And I think you have to balance those things, and it's a tough balance. And there's no panacea. There's no easy answer. But my recommendation to my kids and people I talk to is you've got to live in the yellow. You know, when you're out and about, you know, you can at home, you could be in the green. You could be very relaxed. Depending on where you're at, you can be in the green if you're really secure and feel safe. Don't want you to live in the red. I think living in the red would be a hard way to live. I think a lot of law enforcement officers, we spend time in the red. Because, you know, things escalate to a point where there's danger and we've got to take care of things. But I think police officers live in the yellow. I mean, I can look around the table. I'm sure they'll mention, but we go out to places, we go out to restaurants, we go out to stores. We're looking around, we're paying attention, you know, even off duty. And if you hear something pop, 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 you know, okay. A lot of people think fireworks. A lot of people think it may be something innocuous. And you know what? Most of the time it might be. But I tell my kids to be in the yellow and treat it like it's not. So get out of there, head for safety, look for an exit, you know, and just be prepared to act, be prepared for what might happen. And 99% of the time, if it's nothing, okay, you look a little foolish, or you did a little run, or you got out of there, it was inconvenient. But I think for people in general going to these events, they're lost in the event, they're enjoying themselves, which is great. You're supposed to. And that is the goal. But also balance that by just being aware of what's going on and being prepared to act. Like when you get on a plane, they tell you how to get off if you have to, and hopefully nothing happens, but at least you get that heads up and you're ready. So living in the yellow is kind of the way I present it. I think it won't keep you safe from somebody that's really trying to harm somebody, but it puts you in the best position possible.
So I'm gonna throw it over to Chief Byrd next, and I'm gonna bring in slowly, Ark, because I always like to bring new members on the team, and just to get a feel. So we'll bring in after Chief Johnson. Chief Byrd, you've got Northern Illinois University in your backyard. You've got basketball events. You have football events. You also have million square foot warehouses going up in cornfields if you drive up I-88. And there's a lot of activity going on up there. And you have a lot of public events. And not only the public events, I'll bring up warehouse shootings. I think there was one in Aurora a couple of years ago. So, you know, if you could address how you keep your community safe and what your team is doing with those events, public safety, and what you're doing to work with these companies that are coming into your community, Facebook, Heinz is building a gigantic place. You've got Nestle that weren't there 10 years ago that are now part of the community.
Yeah. So thanks, Dave. And, you know, just to piggyback off of Lou, you know, this yesterday was the 16th year anniversary of the shooting here at NIU.
Oh, wow. Yesterday.
So that happened on Valentine's Day in 2008. So it's, you know, it's sad that we live in an environment and a culture right now that, you know, we have to, like you said, live in the yellow. Sometime we teeter over into the red. I'll give you an example. When I go to Chicago, because I'm born and raised there, believe me, I know all the pitfalls. I know where all the dangers are. So when I go to my mother's house, you know, we grew up on the south side of Chicago in Inglewood area, Inglewood, Park Manor, Grand Crossing. When I exit that interstate, you know, I put my pistol in my lap because I have to be ready. There, I don't have time to us. You know, you really got to be able to move on this because there are carjackers out there. There are vetting cars getting on and off the expressway. If they catch you at a light, if you're a little bit slow, you're behind. You're behind the eight ball. You got to find ways to get around and maneuver and navigate through these situations. When I used to bring the kids with me, you know, my kids would want to jump out of the car. I'm like, wait a minute, hold up. You hold up. You don't get to jump out the car here. I was like, you know, you almost have to do recon, which is, I noticed, you know, I tell this story to some of my officers here because their experiences are different than mine. They didn't grow up in that type of environment. But when I tell you, you have to check the cars in front of you. You have to check the car behind you. I wouldn't let my kids get out the car until I made these, you know, visual checks. And the whole time, my mom is standing in the window with the phone. So just in case things go bad, she can call 911. But it's a process. And this is just coming to visit. I mean, there's nothing else to it. So, man. I mean, when you think about the steps that you have to take in a city like Chicago, and it is what it is. Everybody lives in Chicago knows the game. They understand what they got that to do. There's certain gas stations you can't use. You know it. You go there, the potential of you getting carjacked is high. You don't go there. In certain ways, you have to, you know, you have to walk down the street. You have to check your rears. You have to check your six. They have the tempo. My mom does it every day. She takes public trans every day. I'm like, Mom, try to be in by, like, you know, at least by 4:30, 4 o'clock. But she has learned to navigate all of this. And she's a 78-year-old woman, right? So one year I wanted to give her this nice watch. And this is just another story, but it was Mother's Day. And, like, I wanted to buy her this watch. my sister said, she's like, Dave, don't get her that watch. She's like, she can't wear that watch. And I was like, I was so focused on getting her something nice, you know, that she probably never had. But then she's like, she rides the bus. She's like, she takes the train. If they see that, they're gonna target her. Like, you know, and then as a police officer, I'll be honest with you, I got lost in that. I got lost in the idea of giving her something really nice. Then I had to, and then my sister, I was like, you know what? You're right. You're right. I can't give her this because she'll be a target just because I gave her this watch on her wrist. They will target her. And I was like, you know what? It changed everything. So I had to dummy down and get her a different watch. So that just gives you just some of, you know, how, you know, this criminal nexus affects, you know, what we do on a daily basis, even to the point of buying presents. So, to circle back to, you know, with the shootings, we try to give, when these big events, high visibility, we try to put as many uniformed officers in the area. Like yesterday, they had 800 officers, 800, and it still happened.
Yeah.
Even with 800 officers, I'm sure they had drones up, surveying the area. I mean, you know, they had SWAT teams out there. I mean, they had, you know, they got Overwatch over on buildings, you know, overwatching the event. I mean, they have probably had air support at some point. So you take all these steps, Dave, and Lou will tell you, and all these other chiefs will tell you when they have a big event, you go through your checklist. These are the things that you check off. I got to have this. I have to have this. I have canines. I have, you know, vaporweight dogs, which, you know, bomb detection dogs. I do all these things just so this event will go, you know, without unscathed, without any hiccups, and definitely not have an active shooter. And we do all these things, Dave, and it still happens. So we got to continue to do those steps, high visibility, check off those boxes. That checklist has to be completed. We have to do it every time. Then we got to depend on the community. They see something suspicious, they got to call us. They got to let us know. Even the most smallest thing, we have to know about it. If something doesn't look right, this person doesn't look like they fit, for whatever reason, let us vet it. So let the law enforcement vet that person. You know, a lot of times it is the smallest thing. Is it somebody's just there, he's a loner, that don't look like they're involved in a celebration. Maybe, you know, it just doesn't look right. And then, you know, you have to pick up the phone and make that call and then let us vet it. You know, everybody's involved. I mean, the public safety is everybody's responsibility. Everyone, you know, right? Law enforcement, community, you know, it doesn't matter. We all have a piece of the puzzle to handle. So, I know I got a little long-winded, but I just want to show you how the dynamic of the criminal elements that we deal with in our country affect us even to the minute levels.
Yeah, and I just add this.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lou. Go ahead.
Just real quick. I'm sorry to cut you off. But yeah, it's heartbreaking, Chief, to hear that about the way, you know, your mom's got to live. And she's not alone, right? There are people all across the country. But I think you put it perfectly. That's what we're doing here with this podcast. We want people to hear the realities of what we see and to know that they are our partners. And to your point, you said it perfectly, Chief Byrd, that we need their help. You can go to these events. We can do all we can. We will continue to do that. We'll make it difficult for these people to do what they're going to do. Unfortunately, there are going to be times. And so you then have to advocate for yourself as a human being, as a resident, and be prepared.
Before I throw it over to Chief Johnson, I remember that day because a fraternity brother of mine got killed in Cole Hall. He got shot. And no matter what you do, if for those listening that to the Behind the Badge Illinois, if you've never been to Cole Hall, you come in off the ground and then you go down. Okay, so you're going into a bowl, and the lectern and the stage is at the bottom. It's basically below grade. And this young man, he was just starting his life. Well, he wasn't even in the class. He was there with his girlfriend, and he was a big boy. He was like 6'5". He was a big kid. Dan Parmenter. I apologize to the family if I'm pronouncing the name right. From all accounts, he was a great kid. I graduated, never met him, but it got out through the community, and He went there. He saw this person come from behind the stage and just started opening up, and he dove and protected his girlfriend who survived. And so you could, like you said, Lou, like you said, Chief Bird, you can prepare all you want. Okay. You're sitting in a class on Valentine's Day because you want to be with your girlfriend. Some lunatic comes out with a semi-automatic weapon, starts spraying bullets. And here this kid, you know, was a hero and covered his girlfriend with his body, and he winds up dead. So I thanks for bringing that up, because you never want to forget those that, you know, lose their lives over senseless things like that. So, all right. It's crazy. All right. Let's go out to Fairview Heights to Chief Johnson. What type of activities you guys got going down there in your town, and what are you doing to make your citizens aware to be safe?
Thanks. To everybody, I just got to say this. When I first met Lou, he was given a presentation over Highland Park and the mass shooting that they had there. And knowing that we were doing this podcast today, yesterday when it came out, what was going down in Kansas City, the first department I thought of was Lou and his people there. And I know today they're feeling this because they were through there. Their family was there, all of those types of things. And Lou, I just want to throw that out there. Know that all law enforcement, you know, we know, you know, that brings it back. So appreciate it. So I'll start off with this. So many years ago, my oldest daughter went away to college. She went to Eastern Illinois University, and she's a starving, poor student. So, dad had to come up and take her out to dinner every now and then, 'cause she had no money. So I brought my wife and the youngest daughter, and we would go there, and every single time we're getting ready to sit down at that restaurant, of course, dad gets a call from work. I was running homicide then, and I'd have to step out. So I'd take the call, I'd come back. And when I came back, my daughter, even though she's away at college, she knew exactly where to sit. My youngest daughter knew where to sit. My wife knew where to sit. Now, every time I would go up there and visit her, she would always bring some jobless wonder new boyfriend also. And so whatever this guy's name is, because it changed all the time, he would always sit in my spot. And my spot is the spot that faces the door. There, everybody else knows, in my family, all my friends, everybody. And except for this jobless wonder. So I'd go up to him and I'd say, "Hey, John, would you," and he'd always cut me off. "Hey, my name's not John, it's Patrick." And I said, "Okay, John, do me a favor with me." But my point of it is, the normal human being doesn't live like all of us do in so many ways. So I think teaching our communities, our citizens, everybody, situational awareness is absolutely critical. So 35 years of doing this, wearing a gun belt, my back is shot. I go to rehab trying to fix up my back, and you're doing the weights and the stretches and all this stuff I'm not used to. And then I go to pick up something and it happens all over again. I can't walk for a week. I go back and the nurse literally grabbed me by the shoulders and said, "Steve, don't you teach situational awareness and mindfulness? Before you pick up that lawn chair that has no weight, think about how you do it." And like literally that, her shaking me changed my whole life, because now when I'm camping and doing things, I think about what I'm teaching everybody else about watching around and doing all that, the difference that it makes, right? And I never say the name of active shooters, because that's why they want to do it. So Virginia Tech, a really, really evil, less than human being, killed 32 people. 30 at the end, he killed himself. But before he did that, he walked across a college campus wearing a hunter's vest and a black bag of death. Now, with that black bag of death, he went to a schoolhouse and he took out chains and locks and locked and chained all the doors shut. He climbed through a window, and 2 minutes later, he started slaughtering our children and our teachers. And my point, two points of that is this. Number one, is he two teachers got to that schoolhouse. They saw that the schoolhouse doors were chained and they go, eh, I guess maintenance is working on something. And they turned around and left without calling anybody. Now, I'm not blaming them, but it's situational awareness. This isn't right. This doesn't look right. Call 911, get cops on the way. We would have been 2 minutes ahead on that response. Probably people were still going to lose their lives, but maybe the numbers would be significantly less. It's not the teacher's fault, but teaching people that situational awareness. The other thing is this. There's actually a change all across the United States of America that I think law enforcement needs to talk about. A dude walks across a college campus with a hunter's vest and a black bag. Why doesn't someone say, that looks out of place? Why don't we say, you know, I kind of want someone to check that person. And I know we're not supposed to profile and all those things, but come on, a hunter's vest. And by the way, after he killed himself, he only killed himself because the SWAT team was right on him. He had 203 live rounds of ammunition left over. So that hunter's vest was loaded down. So teaching our citizens situational awareness and mindfulness is absolutely huge. You know, we have a large mall in Fairview Heights, and we have dogs in there that we use that sniff guns. And of course, we catch all the off-duty cops and concealed carry, but also we catch other people with that, like, hey, you need to leave the mall, that type of thing. We're also looking into a lot of technology that's out there now. There's camera systems you can put on drones, you can have in very public areas where big things are going on. Someone pulls out a gun, all of a sudden the AI zooms in on that person and sends all 800 cops in the area a picture of that person that they see a gun. You know, technology helps, but it's not the wherewithal. And even 800 cops isn't the wherewithal. It's that mindfulness and situational awareness. And gosh, Lou, you said it. I don't know how, with what you guys went through, that you ever live again, not in the red zone, but hats off to you guys for at least trying to be in the yellow, because we can't be Rambo. That's no way to live life, but we got to be prepared.
There was a recent at an HBU where, if you guys remember this, the security guards, Dave, you're shaking your head. Georgia? It was an HBU I hadn't heard of.
Was it Morgan State? I know what you're talking about. I just can't remember the school. HBCU. Yep.
The security guards noticed something. I thought, were made aware of that, and they approached this lunatic, and he, I guess, trunk was loaded to go to, just to rage war, and he was going. I think there was a shooting earlier at another HBU, and it brought everybody's awareness to another level. So, what the public has to do is be like what the security guards did at that HBU, and like, hey, this dude doesn't look right, and took him down before he could take anybody else down.
And I'll say, says here's a benefit of our podcast. Chief Steve Johnson gave the tip of the day. When you go into restaurants or you're going somewhere public, sit with your back to the door like cops do, and keep an eye on who's coming in, and you'll just be that much more aware. All I will ask is, if we come in, can we have those seats, please? Because we don't want all of our seats taken. But it is true. We all cops, you will see them. They'll sit in the back of the room. They'll sit with their, looking at the door. It's our habit for us because we're in the yellow. But residents can do that too. Just pay attention.
And what's so funny that Steve said that? He's right. Our families already know this.
Yeah.
I tell you for sure, my girlfriend knows it all the time. And my mom, they'll be like, Dave wants that seat. Dave's going to want that seat. Dave's going to want that seat. When I'm with my brother, he's a Chicago cop. So now we're fighting for it. So I'm like, I'm probably a better shot. Let me have it. But you're right. Steve's right. I mean, you guys all know. I'm sure Eric's going to jump on next and say some of the similar things. But it's true. It's weird that the way we work. I mean, I had to tell, and I'll just tell this quick. My girlfriend, like I was talking about the carjacking, is like just trying to be you know, like Steve said, just situationally aware, situationally prepared. And then it starts turning to tactically being prepared. She's like, you know, she wants to talk. And I'm like, look, we can't talk like right here. I mean, like, you need to be watching that window. You know, we really can't have a conversation right now. And initially she didn't know. I was like, look, I mean, you know, I need you to be checking the mirrors to see if anybody's coming up on us. I really don't have time to really focus on what you're talking about, because people, I'm telling you, the carjacking, it got to a point in Chicago, it was just unreal. So it's like, if you're driving down the interstate, they were using, walkie-talkies. I mean, they're tracking you. I mean, you got multiple cars out there, like they're police officers, and they're tracking, you know, civilians in cars. You know, and then they, you know, you got three or four guys in each car. So I'm like, you know, we can't really talk right now. I was like, just hold it until we get somewhere where I feel like we can get in the yellow. And like you're saying, Lou, and then maybe we can talk. But right now we are deep in the red, girl. I mean, I like, look, it's 79th. Hey, look, it's 79th and King Drive. Like, we really can't talk. So It's insane. It's insane. It's sad.
I'm turning that on my wife. I'm going to be like, hey, we're in the red right now. When I don't want to, you know, to hear what she's saying, I'm like, we're in the red right now, sweetheart.
Well, you'll be in the red for sure after that, David. So.
I live in the red every day with her. So that's all right. So we're going to go out to the beautiful town of Peoria. You've got casinos out there. You've got Bradley University. Just for our listeners that aren't familiar with the beautiful town of Peoria, center of Illinois, right on the river. You've got a huge arena there where you've got hockey, and Bradley plays basketball. I was down at a convention there for the firefighters last summer. So you've got a lot of activity. It's one of the largest towns in the great state of Illinois, the breadbasket right down there, middle America. A lot of companies test different products out there because it's middle class America to a T. So welcome to the podcast, Eric, Chief Eric, and last name, I don't want to butcher it again. If you could let everybody know.
Echeverria.
Okay. Echeverria. I'll have to listen to the podcast.
That's all right. You'll get plenty of practicing.
So what do you guys do down? You in particular, and trained your team down there to keep the folks down at Peoria safe.
Yeah. Say that again. We don't train them?
No. What do you guys do down in Peoria, to keep the residents safe and to make them aware of their surroundings?
Let me give you a little bit of a background on Peoria. You know, I came from Elgin. So I was in Elgin for 20 some years before I took the chief job here. And I didn't know a whole lot about Peoria, to be quite frank. You know, it's the fifth largest city. It's the second most violent in the state. We're a very, very busy city. So for me, there's a lot of communication. We have a transparency dashboard, our Facebook. There's a lot of communication to share a lot of information. Our civic center is the second largest in the state. McCormick is number one. We have the largest movie screen in the United States in Peoria, museums, the zoo, the phenomenal park system that's here, Caterpillar's here, OSF is also here, several Trauma One hospitals. We are the Chicago of Central Illinois is how you compare it, right? 4 a.m. bars, all of that. And it's a handful. We have 218 officers currently. Total of 240 staff. But it's very busy. So, you know, one of the things is communication, and really letting our community know what's happening, how it's happening. I always tell people, I'm going to share my story. I same thing you guys do. But one of the things my family knows is when we're walking down the street, I'm on the side of the road. I'm on the side of where the street is at. And when we're crossing, I'm on the side of the street where cars are coming up. They know that automatically. I will come up. I make sure it's clear. Let's go. We get across the street. And another interesting thing that some people who don't understand policing may look at it like, he's kind of rude. I will open the door as we're going into a building, and I go in first. My wife doesn't go. I'm verifying as I'm walking in that we are, and then I open the door and we come in together. But it's just kind of what we do. My son knows it. My wife knows it. My older children. I only got one left at home. He's 12. So they know everything else as well. And so there are things that we do. I tell our community, everybody nowadays is walking around with their face in a cell phone, not paying attention to what's going on. Put the cell phone down, pay attention. And obviously, one of the things we also tell our community, and I think they should all know, whoever's listening, is we take situations like Lou had to go through, what Kansas City is, and we talk about it here. We debrief and we say, okay, what did they do? How did they do it? Where's a place for improvement? How can we improve if we're in a situation like this? And we learn from each other's incidents, right? We just, February 1st, stopped a mass shooting at one of our schools. I've never seen nothing like this in my 25 years in police. This kid had a full manifesto down to what he would be charged with if we stopped them from committing suicide. Names, addresses, everything, other parties involved, to the point that the Uvalde Foundation has reached out to give us an award because of this, and Secret Services all over it. But again, it's those partnerships between us, and we're a little different here, as in our SROs at the school are employed by the school, the public school district. They're not my employees, but there is a phenomenal relationship and communication between what happens there and what happens here. And we share intel. The IA that you talked about that sees a gun, our school districts have those in their buildings. We also have, for us, one of the things that we push very hard is tip 411. If you don't have it, I recommend you look into it. It gives us an ability that when we do get a tip, an anonymous tip, that we can reach back out anonymously and get more information from that tipster, right? And that's a game changer. But it's gone as far as the school district has also implemented tip 411 in their schools. So we're opening up those lines of communication where people are scared to talk, where they can feel comfortable. And then we share, you know, how many tips we've gotten, how many tips we've gotten, and we share that throughout the year. So people know, okay, they've gotten 100 tips, but we don't know who they are. So we just want to build trust with the community to know that they can share information with us. Our civic center, so the police department, I have my own SWAT team. I have my own EOD team. We're one of three EOD teams in the state. So we get called all over Central Illinois. But because we have the Civic Center, for example, any Live Nation event that's there. And when I say Live Nation, you know, T.I. and was here with Ashanti just the other day. We have politicians that come. The Santis was here for something. Big country stars, big concerts, WWE, all the major events that you would have at a McCormick or at a United Center or at a Rosemont. Well, we have them here. And we have to walk our bomb dogs through there. We have to make sure the place is secure. We do that for all our parades. We have the largest Christmas parade in the oldest, the Santa parade here. It's like 154 years old. Our fireworks, Red, White, and Boom, we get over 200,000 people to come to our city for this event, right along our riverfront. And again, it's 100 officers are out there just for this event. Bikes, our Parks District Police Department is there. The Sheriff's Office will come and support where they can. But we also got to man our districts, and we're 55 square miles. So we have area that needs to be covered as well. Drones, bike patrols, robots on the bike trail, UTVs, ATVs, foot patrols, controlling the ingress and egress of all the areas to get in. So it is a large event, but it's a very secure event because we put in the time and effort. And this is actually the ops plan that was sitting on my desk because I've been looking at, we start to talk about this stuff early on. So planning is done early. We talk about, you know, what do we need? What was our strengths? What was our weaknesses last year? Right. What do we need to change? So we'll do a SWOT. What opportunities do we have? And what were some of the threats? And we worked through that. And again, it's then working obviously with our intel groups, right? What are we seeing? Really following social media and the other intel areas. You know, we're seeing a lot right now. And we try parents is discourse. I think it's called discourse.
Discord.
Yeah. Where these kids are in these chat rooms. And, you know, quite frankly, that's how we were able to avert this mass shooting. We're seeing things in certain areas that, you know, we have to put in the work in advance, but we also have to take these complaints or this information serious. When we got this information, and we get this information a lot, I'm sure the same way you do in your school district. Kid made a comment, he's going to shoot up the school. You can't sit on your ass and wait. It is time to move. We need to verify. We need to check. We need to get to the house. We need to get the guardians. We need to get the parents. We need to be communicating with the schools, and we need to figure out what's happening. You know, I have one of the poorest zip codes in the nation, the fifth poorest zip code in Peoria. And there's a lot of things that happen because of poverty, lack of education, lack of broadband access, and all of this, and things that are said, mental and behavioral health issues. And we have to also handle some of that with care. And we communicate that with the schools. So when there is an issue, they may have to handle something with a little bit more care so it doesn't escalate to something else later. But I think communication is really, really important. The days of holding on to information, those days are behind us, and we have to communicate, and we have to talk, and we have to talk to our neighboring, you know, departments. Even if we are the bigger department in the area, we have to find the time to communicate and share, okay, what are you seeing? What are we seeing? Because it will cross borders, right? So I spoke a lot.
Now, Lou, didn't you? I just want to build upon what Eric said, Lou. You had a similar... Some knucklehead kid made a comment, from what I remember, it was all over the news, at least up North Shore, where, you know, I live by Lou up in Northbrook. I think it was last year what Eric was saying, some kid, you know, said something stupid and they shut the school down, right? You wanna elaborate on that and what you
said? Yeah, I will. Permission for a point of clarification first. Permission?
Yeah, sure. Go
on. Okay. All right. So what we do, and I'm going to try to catch this as much as possible, and you hold me to it too, as well, my fellow colleague chiefs. What we do in law enforcement, we talk a lot of police jargon. We shorten things for expedience on the radio. We do acronyms. We do all that stuff, but we're going to try to make sure our listeners, so that they understand. So I'm going to say, Chief Eric had two that I just want to make sure people know what they are. SRO. That is a school resource officer. And yes. The SRO works in the school. And if you're fortunate enough to have them, and there's some school districts that may not want them, don't need them. But I think personally, in his case, really paid off. In my case, it paid off to have that officer in the school. But an SRO is a school resource officer. And the other one I saw was EOD. Chief Eric, what do you want to tell them about that?
What's an EOD? Explosive ordnance. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Don't be sorry. We do it all the time.
It's our bomb squad. So we have
bomb squad.
There you go.
There it is.
It makes it easy.
I do this. This happens all the time when I'm giving presentations. So I've learned, you know, I will roll through my presentations. Community people will raise their hand. What is an SRO? So we do it all the time. So we're going to call it. We're going to definitely try to let our public know. But back to your point, David. Yeah, absolutely. And to Eric's point, and to everybody's point, working with the community is key. These tips and see something, say something should be really the mantra for everybody. Don't be afraid to let us know. Look at what was averted in Peoria. There are many more examples. We had one similar that we became aware of. We're able to intercede. Ours was nowhere near the level of the Peoria one, but it still was unsettling for parents. And we were able to intercede in something. And we just had, it was on the news yesterday because of a tip. We had somebody who was charged with human trafficking. She was, you know, holding people against their will, migrants, and making them pay money and putting them in forced servitude right here in Highland Park and a lot of other atrocious things she was doing. And the only reason we knew was because of a tip. We're not in people's homes. We can't know what's going on unless we work and have trust with our community. So I think, you know, again, this is a very heavy topic for our listeners. And I know it. I talked to my family members and my friends. People are worried, no doubt. And so we give you the straight truth here, you know, the maybe the darker side of things, unfortunately, but you need to hear that. You need to hear what's going on. You know, Chief Bird's, you know, examples. I mean, they're happening. People are living them, you know, and you need to know that. We all, right. They're living it across this country. And but we also want to give you some hope because it's got to get better. We got to be positive. We all are. We wouldn't be doing this or lasting this long if we weren't. You've got good police officers, good systems in place. We can do our part to keep you safe. But at the end of the day, there's ownership and a partnership. And that's what you need to take away from today. If you're listening, live in that yellow, pay attention, that situational awareness, Johnson said, you know, all the things, partnership, see some, these are all key elements to putting yourself in the best position to be safe.
And let me just say this. You are so right. And I don't even want to leave this podcast without telling everybody. Do not let them win. And when I say them, the criminal element in this country, go to these events. You should go out with your family. You should do everything that you want to do. Because I'm going to tell you right now, if you do not do that, they have won. And that's the truth. And that's why, as much as I worry about my mom riding the CTA and you know, taking the train system in Chicago, I want her to live her life. She's 78 years old. I hope I have her for another 30 years, whatever the case may be. But whatever that might looks like for her, I want her to enjoy herself. I encourage her, go to your, you know, go to your class. She goes to Pilates. She does a dance.
Good for her. Oh, yeah.
She does a line dancing class. She goes to the movies. She plays cards at this one bar on the South Side. I'm like, Mom, do you have a good time. Enjoy yourself. Be mindful of your surroundings. She already knows this. I mean, I'll tell you a quick story. And this is so crazy. I talked to her this was about 5 years ago. I was with state police and I was always on the South Side. So I would come check on her. And then she told me, she's like, you won't believe what happened the other day. I'm like, what, Mom? So she tells me she's on the bus stop at 71st and King Drive. She walks past three or four kids, you know, and they're probably older, 18, 19 year olds. And she's like, she crossed the street. She saw them coming on her side. She crossed the street. Okay, there you go. You got to be tactical. She moves across. She goes and gets to the bus stop. As soon as she gets to the bus stop, these guys open up on another group of guys. Shots fired all over the place. She runs into the store on the corner. The guy lets her in. Thank God he had a security doorway. He could lock it. So he let her in. She went all the way to the back. She got down on all fours and she stayed there. When everything cleared, the guy was like, hey, it's, you know, whatever, you know, it had been a little time. She jumped back up. She goes back out and she gets on the bus and takes off. And I'm like, Mom, I'm like, why did this happen like 3 days ago? I'm like, Mom, why didn't you tell us? You know, and she's like, look, you know, she's like, it is what it is. I had to do what I had to do. It happened. I ran inside. I got safe. I went back out, but she didn't let it stop her day. That's my point. And, you know, I hate to say that we're getting so used to this, you know what I mean? Where we just get back on the bus and continue our lives. But I think the trauma of it, you know, I mean, we just can't afford it to just totally destroy us, who we are, what we do. The fear can't paralyze us where we can't do the things that we like to do. Otherwise, I mean, truly, are we living? I mean, are we really living if we allow that to happen? And I know in your case, Lou, the trauma of the city alone. I mean, there's trauma, you know, that occurred at that shooting on 4th of July. It all comes back, just like Chief Steve said, it comes back. But I hope that everyone is like, all right, I'm over it. It took me back for a second, but I'm going to the movies. It's Valentine's Day. I'm going to eat dinner. I'm not going to worry about this because, I mean, what else can we do? I mean, truly. I mean, we're doing everything we can do to try to prevent these things. The last thing I will say is that we got to do a better job on assessing mental health ahead of time. So now I'm talking about the actual perpetrators, you know, the neighbors, like, You lived next to this person for years. I mean, there was nothing that there was no red flags, no indicators that this person might be capable of a crime like this. I mean, come on. Like, and the parents, where are you at? Like, you know, your kid locks himself in a room for hours, never comes out, doesn't associate with any other kids on the block. They probably need some help. And you need to, so those are some of the things on the, you know, I mean, now we're talking about getting deep in the weeds, but I mean, it's we have to have everything in conjunction working at the same time to prevent these type of situations. So there's just that other component that I know we didn't really dive into, but
we will at some point.
At some point we will.
We will. Yeah, for, I mean, sure, for sure.
We got plenty of podcasts. I get it.
Yeah.
So I
will say, Dave, I will say, you know, to your point exactly, we are going to have our 4th of July parade this year. We're going back to it. We're you know, the community needed a little bit of a different approach last year. And, sure, and out of obviously sensitivity to the victims and families, we wanted to handle it, you know, really with deference. But we do know that, you know, we want as a community. So you do hear that in the community. We do need to get back, to your point, and to live. And it is an unfortunate where we're at, but we are here and we've got to find ways to make it better. We'll talk, I'm sure, on other podcasts about that piece, but to deal with what we're dealing with now, we've got to find good ways to do it. And I think we gave everybody, I know we're getting close to the end here, but I know we gave, or feel like we gave, some good recommendations, and we'll talk more about it, I'm sure, in the future.
Yep. Well, I just want to thank Chief Johnson, Chief Jogman, Chief Eric down in Peoria, because I don't want to butcher your Puerto Rican heritage and your last name. I'll get my tongue rolling. And Chief David Byrd. And this show is sponsored by Team Hochberg, which is me. We are looking for other sponsors. If you're interested in sponsoring this podcast, shoot me an email. Set up an email for the podcast, behindthebadgeil@gmail.com. A little tip out there, learn this week, for veterans seeking loans, you could get a gift for closing costs, veteran VA loans. You could do 100% financing, no private mortgage insurance. And if you're service connected disabled, you could get your funding fee waived. But if you need money for a down payment, you could get a gift from anybody. It doesn't have to be a family member. So that's your mortgage tip of the day. And we always like to leave it. Chief Johnson, you're up next for your story, a funny story, but I'll throw myself out there this week. 18 years old, parents are away, had a little risky business party before risky business was out, had the kegs in, got two kegs. I had a really good ID that was my face, but somebody else's name. Let's just leave it at that. Statute of limitations has expired on that. And put two kegs in the basement in garbage cans, had the football players at the front door, collecting $5 in 1984, which was a lot of money, cleared about $900. So I was rolling. It was about 11 o'clock. People went leave. Car started backing up. So genius that I am, I called the cops, figured, hey, I'll call the cops. I'll send some squads out. People see the squads, take off. Well, the squad came out, saw the people, called for backup. So I was in unincorporated Des Plaines. I had county cops and I had Niles cops. Unbeknownst to me at the time, around 11 o'clock was shift change. So these officers had plenty of time to, you know, hang out. So they all came, and I lived at the corner. So they blocked the intersection with about 10 to 15 police cars so nobody could move now. And officer came up to me. I was in a Hawaiian shirt and terry cloth shorts, because that's the what. And I looked really good in 1984 in that outfit. Officer comes up to me, goes, send somebody down at the end of the block to pick up the beer cans. No problem, officer. I'll take care of it myself. No, son, you're coming with me. Handcuffs me, throws me in the back of a Niles police car. My friend's mom banging on the window saying, he's a good boy. Let him out. Let him out. And then her husband, Mr. Fishman, who was at his funeral a couple weeks ago, bailed me out. There goes my $800, right? The bail was like $300-$400. I got fingerprinted. I got a mugshot and a Hawaiian shirt, and then it cost me $300 to bail me out, $500 to get my record expunged. So all the profit I made, $800 in 1984, boys. You know that went a long way. I'm like,
that's a lot of money.
This is a lot of money. So everything that I covered, all the expenses, parents came home. I was grounded for a month. I think I got my ass kicked by my dad. So that's my funny story. Try to top that, Chief. It's not as good as Chief's Bird running down the whole south side of Chicago with his underpants and his pants being torn off and leaving all his equipment all over the place. So you're up next weekend, Chief Johnson. Try to top that. So
the only thing I can say is we're going to get that copy of the booking picture and have
we got to get that.
That was my question.
Yeah.
You got a copy of that floating around?
There's got to be. I'm scared. You're 18-year-old. I mean, I was shitting in my pants. I didn't know what was going on. And here comes Mr. Fishman, bails me out. Let's go get it.
I'm sure, David, that there's a cop from that scene that their funny story is the nitwit that called on himself. I'm sure you made some cops very happy that night and onward to have a good funny story for themselves.
That's great, Dave. I tell you what, man. That backfired.
That wasn't so good. So all right,
that totally backfired, brother.
I was loaded there until I had to pay the bail and I had to pay the expungement, but it was well worth it. So
It started out, you came from a good place in the beginning.
I came from a good place. Yeah, right. So more on that item. So thanks for listening to this podcast every week. We're going to drop some next week. We're going to go with what we're going to set up with is how different organizations and different forces are set up in different parts of the state. Right. Chief Eric's got his set up. Chief Bird, you got yours. Chief Johnson, Chief Jogman, and whoever else could join us on the next podcast. We recruited a couple of new chiefs. Welcome to the team, Eric. And we want to keep this thing growing. So if you've got any questions, concerns, want us to cover some topics, behind the badge IL@gmail.com, share and like. And thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great day.